We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi again, everybody. Welcome to the Buffs Insider, our weekly podcast here at CUBuffs.com. From the website, Neil Welk. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. We come to you immediately after a Buffs basketball loss. Colorado was dropped 3 in a row as they fell on Wednesday night, 75-64 to USC, now sitting at 15-13 of the season, 7-9 in Pac-12 conference play. Neil, this thing's turning in a very wrong direction for the Buffaloes at this point in time. They've got themselves in a situation where postseason becomes an enormous question mark right now for the Buffaloes.
Yeah, and you know what's scary, Mark, is it was 10 days ago we're sitting here talking about this team that had an RPI in the high 60s. They'd won 3 in a row at home. They were headed up to Washington, and we're thinking, okay, this team has a chance if they do – you know, play well down the stretch, that they're an NCAA at-large team. I mean, there were other people talking about that. And now, right now, you're looking at them, are they an NIT team? And they still have time to turn it around and get back to at least that, but they've got to beat UCLA on Sunday. Then they've got to go to Utah, and they've got to win a couple games in that Pac-12 tournament, I think. And the scary thing is the Pac-12 is probably only going to get 2 or 3 teams into the NCAA tournament. So when you start figuring that leaves 6 or 7 Pac-12 teams looking at the NIT. They're not going to take that many. So it's a really crucial stretch for them.
I think we're asking the same question that Tad Boyle and his staff are asking right now. How does this team, which won 3 in a row, looked awful good in a victory over Stanford, awful good in a victory over Utah, had its issues against Cal, obviously, then go out and lay an egg in 3 consecutive ball games, and the cornerstone of this program is based on defense, and it seems to have disappeared.
Just went out the tubes. They held 3 opponents to under 37% shooting. 3 in a row, Cal, Utah, and Stanford. And then they go out and you know, the USC game the other night was very indicative of how far south it went in such a hurry. USC shot almost 55% from the field in the event center. And that doesn't happen very often. And, Tad doesn't have an answer other than they just didn't get the stops.
Yeah, and you look at it, you go back to that game on January 10th, Buffaloes at USC, lost a 12-point ball game. They had 22 turnovers. They got out-rebounded. This one they have 13. That's an acceptable number. They go +6 rebounding. They have 13 offensive rebounds. And I think as you glance down the stat sheet, you look at George King, a cornerstone of what this team is supposed to be this season, second leading scorer, is held without a field goal for the first time since February 3rd of last season in a victory at Stanford, a game in which Derek White, by the way, went out of his mind, so it didn't really hurt the Buffs that day. But he goes 0-6 shooting, 0-4 from downtown. He does have 6 rebounds in 32 minutes. that guy is way too important for this team not to have any offensive production.
Yeah, no, and I asked Tad about that after the game, and he said, hey, look, I'm not going to play the underclassman card, but if you look at that USC game, Chemezi Metu, Jordan McLaughlin, they're juniors and seniors, their upperclassmen came through and made plays. Players make plays. Colorado's playmakers, upperclassmen playmakers in particular, didn't. And if you want to look at the difference in that game, that's where it came down to. And, yeah, you're not going to win too many games with George King not getting a field goal.
Yeah, without question. Now, with that being said, here's a bright spot, I guess, in the middle of all the murkiness. 16 points, 8 rebounds, 5 offensive for Lucas Seward. He had that stretch where I thought early in the season he played very well. Then he had the ankle injury in that tournament in Virginia. And it took him a while to figure that out, but he's come back and started to show something. What is he in? I think he's in double digits now, 4 of the last 7 ball games.
Yeah, and he had a really key stretch tonight. Not only is he in double digits, if you look back at those games that he's had stretches like that, they've come in really crucial moments during the game. They had a 14-0 run against SC, came back. They were down by 12, went on a 14-0 run, took a 2-point lead. Lucas had 9 points in that run, a couple 3-pointers and a 3-point play. That's a guy that you look at. He's a sophomore, and you don't want to talk about next year now, but if you want to talk about next year, that's one of the guys that you look at and say, yeah, he's going to be a big help for him next year.
Tad has been very clear on saying frequently, I'm not going to use youth as an excuse. And I think that's admirable, and I think that's the correct approach to take. But let me split hairs a little bit from that viewpoint with you a little bit and get your thoughts on this. Youth is not an excuse, but I do wonder if we're looking at the immaturity of a basketball team.
I think that's a very apt description right there. This team still has a lot of growing up to do, and even the young guys. I mean, I think McKinley Wright is going to be every bit that Jordan McLaughlin is, and Jordan McLaughlin is a great point guard, and I think McKinley Wright's going to be every bit like that. But McKinley's still immature.
Yeah.
He's still making some mistakes.
Yeah, without question. You kind of stole my thunder. The next question I was going to ask you, do you think what we see in Jordan McLaughlin, is that what McKinley's going to become?
Oh, yeah. McKinley has all those tools. I mean, McKinley sees the floor. McKinley has something you can't teach. He has a high basketball IQ. He sees the floor. He knows what's going on. He's still struggling once in a while, and he's finding out what he can do against Pac-12 competition, what he can't. When a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, he's going to be the guy that's averaging, 15 points a game. He's going to have 6 or 7 assists a game, and he's going to have 1 or 2 turnovers a game, which is exactly what SC's McLaughlin is right now.
Did you realize, and I looked this up before the ball game, it's the only reason I know it, McKinley Wright at 6 feet tall on a good day and a buck .85 as a freshman is number 14 in the Pac-12 in the entire league in offensive rebounding. Think about that for a second.
Well, look at the way he hits the boards, the way that kid – and again, it goes back to that instinct, IQ, whatever you want to call it. He knows where the ball is going. He gets in there. He finds position. I saw him one time tonight. He got tangled up with Metu, who's 6'11", and he was throwing his arm out of the way, and he actually got the ball. And Metu kind of gave him a little bit of a shove, and McKinley just turned around and laughed and said, sorry, I got this ball.
All right, last game of the home schedule anyway on Friday, UCLA. We'll say goodbye to George King. We'll say goodbye to Dominic Collier, Josh Repine, and we assume Torrey Miller-Stewart, although he could come back and actually go through Senior Day festivities twice. As you look at that group, what's a kind of a parting thought about that for?
I think they all came here and they played hard throughout their career. I think they all contributed to this program. I think they helped make the program better. I think this program is still on very, solid footing. And if you want to look at guys that had character and that were good kids throughout their career here at the University of Colorado, I think all 4 of them fit that mold very well. I think people should be proud of the way they handle themselves on and off the floor at Colorado.
That is a 2 o'clock tip-off between the Buffs and the Bruins. Of course, the only road win in conference play was at UCLA, so don't think the Bruins, who are also eyeing an NCAA tournament bid as well, will come in here locked and loaded on Sunday afternoon. We'll hit the air 1:30 on the network with the Buffs warm-up pregame show presented by Safeway, by the way, in Denver little change from a programming standpoint. Game will not be on KOA News Radio. It'll be on Orange and Blue 760 on Sunday afternoon. That'll be Boston Bruins at 2 o'clock. Shifting gears real quick. And by the way, we're going to hear postgame comments from Tad Boyle coming up. And also one of our favorites, Carlin Brown, was in the house on Wednesday night. We chatted with him. We'll have you here listen in to that conversation as well. We weren't with you last week. We were on the road last week. Didn't get a chance to get you here on the Insider. But Seal Berry, Senior Administrator for the Buffaloes, legendary basketball coach, is now a Hall of Famer in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. How about that?
You know, well, for one, it makes me feel old because I think I covered every year that Seal was here coaching, I think I was covering those teams. And
hey, by the way, breaking news, you are old.
Thanks for that confirmation there, Mr. Journalist. It's a well-deserved honor. I mean, what Seal Berry did, not only for the University of Colorado, the you know, number of times they went to the NCAA tournament, the, you know, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Big Eight championships, Big 12 championships, you know, all the NCAA tournament games they played in, but also what she did for the game of women's basketball in general. I mean, she came in right when the game was still in its infancy, you know, in the early 80s when it was just starting to get going, and she helped build the sport. She stayed involved. She's still, you know, with the athletic department, and certainly a great honor what she's done for the game. And if you want to talk about great Colorado basketball coaches, women's basketball, people still expect it to be good. They expect it to be good. The expectations are that Colorado women's basketball should be good. And that all goes back to Seal Berry.
Yeah, without question. So congratulations to Coach Berry. She's a 2018 Women's Basketball Hall of Fame inductee. That'll be June 9th in Knoxville, Tennessee. Also, we want to mention very quickly that today, in fact, as the Insider's coming out, spring ball for Mike McIntyre's football team getting underway. And I know there's a lot of work to be done, and there's going to be, I think, an intense focus for this basketball team going through these practices.
Yeah, I think this spring is going to be really interesting. Every spring is important. Every spring is competitive. A lot of positions up for grabs, but this one's going to be, I think, a little more competitive and a little more sense of urgency for this team. They want to come back. They won 5 games last year, number one. Number two, there are a lot of positions that are open. There is a, you know, offensive line is wide open. Wide receiver is open. Defensive line, all these positions. And not only is it competitive, Mark, I think this is going to be a year where there's a lot of talent. It's some of it's untested, some of it's young, but I think it's going to be a competitive spring, and I think you'll see these guys all, you know, fighting pretty hard to get a leg up going into fall camp. And so I think it's going to be a very important spring in that regard.
Lastly here, I think one guy that I'm going to watch intently when you and I are out of practice, and that is Steven Montez. You know, last year, Cepho leaves. He had played a little bit the year before. You're walking into your first season as a starter. You're allowed a little bit of leeway from a leadership standpoint. Okay, you made a couple mistakes. Don't you think the expectations will be ratcheted up now for a guy who comes back and looks to be, anyway, on paper, the guy whose team it is, and it's time for you to step up and really become a leader?
No, I mean, right now he's the incumbent. He's the incumbent starter. He's actually the first quarterback at Colorado to start every game in a season since 2007, I believe. It's been 10 years since somebody did that. So he's the incumbent starter. You're right. Last year, Steven Montez had the luxury of playing on an offense that had 6 or 7, 8 seniors. He is now the leader of that offense. He is the guy. He has to make that his team, and that means Steven Montez has to do more than just be a good player on the field. He has to be a leader in every regard, and that means in the film room, that means off the field, that means in off-season conditioning, all those things. And I think it's good he has a new quarterback's coach, because Kurt Roper has no past connection to Steven Montez, and I think this is a big spring for Steven Montez, you know, learning the nuances of playing the position, not just going out and playing on Saturdays and going out and practice.
He is Neil Welk, CUBus.com. Of course, the Spring Bowl culminates with what they're calling the Spring Showcase on March 17th. Of course, we'll have that broadcast on the network. Of course, we started off the Insider this week talking about the Buffs' loss on Wednesday to USC by a 75-64 count, with the UCLA on top on Sunday. Of course, after the ball game, joining us on the radio broadcast, head coach Tad Boyle lamenting his team's defensive effort.
Yeah, I mean, they come in our building and shoot 54, almost 55% when you round up. I mean, you're not going to beat anybody doing that. I mean, you better be scoring at a high clip and shooting at a high clip, which we're not. Their zone gave us problems. Obviously, We're not a very good zone offensive team right now. We proved that against Washington. We proved it again tonight. And I don't understand why, because I'm telling you, Mark, if you come in here, and we had a couple really good possessions, but we're just not consistent enough ball movers. And, you know, one of the things we did not talk about before the game in our pregame was USC is number one in the league in turnover margin, which means, you know, if, again, they had six turnovers, we had 13. That's a margin of seven. And they're number one in our league. They turn people over, but yet they don't turn it over. So that's an extra seven possessions that they got based on the turnover differential. And then you add to that, you know, to their eight offensive rebounds. Okay, that's another 15 possessions that they got that were extra ones that we gave them. And we gave them because we didn't box them out, or we gave them because we turned it over more than they did. And that's, you know, in a game like this, when you're not guarding, it makes it difficult.
Yep. You look at how low their turnover numbers are, and I think a lot of that, you said in the pregame, he might be as good a point guard as in the country, Jordan McLaughlin. There's a nonchalance about him. It's almost like he doesn't get sped up because he's so confident
the way he handles. He does not get sped up. He's got a great pace about himself, and he makes big plays for his team when his team needs him to make big plays. A couple big-time threes, you know, that were just daggers in our heart. Metu, we had no answer for him there for a stretch. Again, they're setting a lateral screen for him. It's, you know, something we've worked on, something we've gone over and shoot around, something we've watched film on. But this team, for some reason right now, and we've done it in the past, but for right now, they're not taking the things from the shoot-around or the timeout or the film sessions that we're having. They're not taking them out to the court and recognizing those situations. And when that happens, you know, not good things happen for the Buffaloes.
Yeah. It's tough as well, Ted, and, you know, I'll ask you about Lucas here in just a moment. Mm-hmm. I thought he played very hard today. And McKinley, what is McKinley like? George, when he doesn't get a field goal and is valuable and as much as you guys need him offensively to get out of here with 4 points and be over in the field, that's tough for you guys to overcome.
We need our two seniors, Mark. Yeah. We need Dom. We need George. And wasn't a great weekend for him in Washington. It wasn't a great night tonight for him. You know, Dom got in foul trouble. But we need those two kids to play up to the level of their capabilities tonight they didn't, but you know, we've got to figure a way to overcome that, and we've done that in the past. Look, we fought our way back into this game, and we fought our way back, and we tied it up at 58, and then boom, we go dead on defense, and we go dead on offense, and they go on a 13-0 run, and that's the game, and it was frustrating, to say the least. I know our fans, I could sense the frustration in the building, But we just have to get better. I've got to do a better job. And this team is not playing right now the way we're capable of playing, and I've got to take responsibility for that, and I do. And it's back to the drawing board because we've got 3 days here, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, to get ready for one more home game, Sunday at 2 o'clock against the UCLA Bruins, who we've proven we can beat. But much like Utah, when they came in here, you know, when we played at UCLA, they missed a lot of shots. We did not get their best shot. We're going to get a different UCLA team Sunday than we had in LA, and so we better be ready for it. And if we don't kind of buck up, so to speak, and rise to playing up to our ability level, this season's not going to end on a good note. But I'm still hopeful, and I'm optimistic, and we've got four great, great seniors who are terrific young men that I want to see sent out on a positive note on Sunday. So we really need our fans to come and show their appreciation to these four kids and what they've done over their careers, and hopefully we can finish on a high note. But tonight's not one.
Let me have you leave on a high note here. Lucas Seward gave you 17 minutes of action, gave you 16 points, 8 rebounds, 5 offensive, 2 of 2 from downtown. Young man was playing hard.
He played well, no doubt. And, you know, again, we need one of those nights where all of us are playing well, and we haven't had one of those in a while, and both offensively and defensively. But Lucas did some good things for us, made some shots, and you know, we need that. He stretches the defense. There's no doubt about that. But that is a bright spot. But this isn't about individual performances. This is about wins and losses, and we've lost 3 in a row. We've done that before in the league and bounced out of it. We better figure out a way this time.
Yep. Coach, we'll see you on Sunday.
Yep. Thank you.
So, a disappointment for head coach Tad Boyle of the Buffaloes as they fall in their second to last home game of the season to USC, 75-64. The Buffs now sitting at 15-13 overall. They are 7-9 in Pac-12 conference play as they get ready for UCLA coming to town on Sunday at the Coors Event Center. Always great when alums come back and visit the program and hang out at the ball game. One of our favorites of all time, the MVP of the very first 2012 Pac-12 Championship Basketball Tournament, which, of course, unlike now being held in Las Vegas, was in Los Angeles. Carlin Brown was back at the ballgame on Wednesday, and he joined us pregame on the broadcast on the Colorado Basketball Network. You ought to see Carlin. He's lost all kinds of weight, and I asked him about that off the top.
No, I'm at good to see you as well. Yep. I'm at my healthiest weight, let's just say that.
Okay, now how did this happen? How'd you lose all that weight?
Oh, man, I turned vegan about 7 months ago.
Okay.
Maybe pushing eight, but it was a lifestyle change due to some of the injuries I kept having.
Right.
And the inflammation I kept having. And I tried every other remedy, every other therapy, every other injection, drain, MRI, you name it, I tried it. So
okay.
I figured why not expand my options and try the diet, and it's worked for me.
Expand
so far.
Your options by limiting your options, actually, right? Is that?
I mean, everybody has their own cup of tea or their favorite thing.
Was it tough for you?
At first it was, but being that my wife is a nutritionist and she kind of slowly started taking out the Oreos and the Red Vines out of the pantry and replacing it with some more healthy stuff, it made it an easier change. And like they say, the women, the wives keep us alive.
So, without question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Scott was wondering, does going vegan, does that include still drinking beer or not?
Gluten-free beer.
Gluten-free beer?
Vegan beer, whatever doesn't sit in the stomach for 48 hours. As you know, it can have you feeling very sluggish and slow.
Scott's never felt it.
So the weight loss is just a byproduct, and it wasn't the goal necessarily.
No, I wanted to get down. I think I was at around 210 to 215 when I was playing here. I wanted to get down to 195 and see what I felt like. And once I felt comfortable at that weight, that's when I locked in on it. And the vegan diet just kind of attributed and made the process that much faster.
Here's the big news about Carlin Brown, if you haven't heard by this point in time. I'm just saying hi to Vern Harris, one of our umpires here tonight. You're 18 months ago, you became a father.
Correct.
That changed your world, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
It's been a blessing. It's been a gift. It's been a challenge. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. As me and you shared earlier, it's the greatest thing you can do as a human being. So being able to shape and mold my son, hopefully be a better person than me, then I've succeeded in his life.
So what's keeping you busy? That's a simple question. You got a brand new child. Outside of the family, what's keeping you busy now?
Trying to stay healthy, trying to get back to the swing of things. I'm at a point in my life where basketball has given me so much, but at the same time, it's a business, and I understand that at every level, it's about having the youngest, the fastest, the most energetic and explosive. And I still have it in me, in my mind, and I still have it in my heart. I just don't know if my body's going to follow. So I'm at a crossroads where if I'm able to play, I'm going to do it and do it to the highest level that you guys know that I'm capable of.
Yep.
But if I'm not, no hard feelings. I'm at peace with that decision. And I've had a great career. But right now I'm trying to plan and create my own business. And hopefully that can start to take shape here in the next couple of months.
You know, somebody much smarter than me once said, not saying that you're at this point, but there comes a time when you're not done with the game, but the game is done with you. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. If there was a magic serum or a magic pill that I could take to be 21 doing windmills in the Pac-12 tournament every day of my life, I would take it every day of my life.
Oh, but that's a good memory right there.
Time is undefeated.
Yeah.
And no matter how much you try to shape and shift it or mold it, it's always going to catch up. But hopefully, like I said, I have one more last run in me to do something great and to leave my legacy in basketball and go from there.
I remember the dunk you're talking about, and I think I said on the air, I now know what Brown can do for you. It was, how often do you get, when you're around Colorado here and back in the Boulder, Denver area, how often do you get asked about or someone brings up a memory from that stretch?
It happens pretty often. If the coaching staff isn't bringing it up, some of the guys are asking me about it. And if I'm in town or if I'm on Pearl Street and people remember that defining moment of CU basketball history, at least for my generation in the 2000s, they definitely say, hey, I remember that. And I get it a lot on Twitter, especially when, let's say, somebody does a dunk here. And they're like, oh, that was nice, but it wasn't what Carlin was doing back in the day. So
I love it. That was such a special 4 days, 4 wins, 4 days, first Pac-12 conference tournament.
Right.
I know, Tad, had you talked to the team. What was your message to these guys?
It was very straightforward. Coach Boyle and Coach Roan know me. I don't really hold my tongue back back in those war days. So I told him, you know, guys, it was kind of embarrassing to see what you did last week. I'm going to be honest, as an alumni and a former player. But I know with the right preparation and the extra motivation of some comments that were said, I'm not going to point fingers or say names, but I think both teams are motivated. So I expect a very much improved performance than what they did in L.A., where I felt like they were kind of a little bit punked on both ends of the floor by USC. So hopefully it won't be like that tonight. But I said I don't know what it is about CU basketball in the Tab Boyle era, but it seems like we're allergic to winning on the road.
I don't know
what the problem is or what the remedy is, but we got to fix it soon.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, they got a great opportunity coming up with the tournament. It is always good to see you.
You too, my friend. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Good luck.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you with that little one.
Thank you. You too.
Well, great to catch up with one of the greats in Buff history in recent years, the 2012 Pac-12 Tournament MVP, Carlin Brown, as the Buffaloes took that inaugural Pac-12 event in Los Angeles, went on to the NCAA Tournament, of course, won a game, lost a game that year, and now he's enjoying what is his second year of fatherhood with that 18-month-old, and so we wish the best to Carlin Brown. Speaking of greats in Buff history, Colorado Senior Women's Associate Athletic Director Seal Berry, one of the great college basketball coaches in the history of women's basketball, has now been honored nationally. In fact, last week, she was named to the 2018 induction class to the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame.
It was so much fun. I heard from people that I haven't heard from since grade school. It was great.
That's something I would think, too. So you get into coaching for the love of the game and teaching and all the things that you get in. You don't even think about that kind of thing. So when it happens, it's probably not something you thought about, but now that it's here, it's a great honor. It's a great feather in your cap.
Well, when I started coaching, there was no building. There was no Hall of Fame. So if you're going to be a bust in the Hall of Fame, it was Wizard of Oz, I think.
Right. Well, what does this mean to you now that you're sitting here? Has it sunk in by now?
It has sunk in. And I'll say one thing. Getting the honor after you get out of coaching, you do have time to really kind of think about what it means to you.
Yeah.
I think if I was still in coaching, many coaches get it while they are in coaching. It's probably like one of those things is on your schedule you need to go do.
Right.
But I'm really excited about it and honored and humbled, and it's great.
When you look at the class you're going in with, it's a pretty special class of people going in with you.
Yeah, Shamiqua Holskla won national championships. Katie Smith, I coached USA basketball. I think it was world championships in Korea. Mickey DeMoss and Chris Daly, two of the greatest assistant coaches. So, yeah, they're threatening to sell out right now. You know, they've never sold out the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm like, right on. I want to be in the sellout class.
That's fantastic. You know, a lot of times we hear people when they get a Hall of Fame type induction honor, they always say, it's cliche, but it's just the honest truth. You wouldn't be here without a lot of people. And you've had a lot of people that blessed you and helped you along the way in your coaching career.
There's no question about it. First and foremost, assistant coaches.
Sure.
Assistant coaches never get the credit that they deserve. They're the ones really out there getting the players, evaluating the players, writing, you know, these recruiting letters back in the day, emails, texts.
Yeah.
But also players that made the decision to come to Colorado.
Yeah, without question. She's a Buff great now. She's a Hall of Famer. In fact, she said a moment ago that she's heard from a lot of people. What was the best message you think you got when the word came down you're going to be a Hall of Famer?
Oh, my gosh, Mark.
Putting you on the spot here, aren't
I? I don't know. I got a lot. Benita Martin was particularly. Benita played for me 1989, 1990, around there. She really kind of captured a lot of things. She got the good with the bad.
Right.
You know, she talked about all the running we did when we turned the ball over at Utah back in the day. I don't know. She just talked about a lot of things that the sort of professional people become because of collegiate athletics.
Sure, yeah.
And you know, when you're coaching, you do really need to make sure that 20 years later you're going to be proud of that person. So you're molding kids when they're 18, 19, 20, the importance of academics, all that stuff kind of comes under your purview when you're a coach.
I would have to think, too, and it's one of the things that they always say in coaching, there's only 6 inches between a pat on the back and a kick in the tail, right? And you had to do that. And sometimes it was tough love on players. It's got to be rewarding that all these years later when they come back and say, Coach, I didn't like it, but thank you.
Yeah, it's a real fine line. Mm-hmm. You can't get too negative. You get too negative, you'll lose them.
Sure.
If you're too positive, they take advantage of you.
Yeah.
So you're constantly walking that line between exactly what you said, kicking them, getting them going, motivating them, They come here after class, and I tell you, it was a fun job. It really was. I enjoyed 99% of it.
When you look back in your career now that you've had a little space in between, what stands out? What do you think about when you think of Coach Sealberry?
You know, I think about the players. Mm-hmm. I think about how much fun we had. We really had a great time. The bus rides, the pizza, you know, sitting in the airport talking with kids. This is a great time. I loved it.
Coach, congratulations. Well-deserved.
All right. Thanks so much.
Well, certainly a well-deserved and great honor for Sealberry, one of the greats in college women's basketball, and now she's a Hall of Famer. Again, that ceremony coming up in Knoxville, Tennessee on June 9th. Looking forward to that great honor. Basketball this weekend. The CU men have one game remaining at the Coors Event Center. That's UCLA coming to town, a team the bus knocked off back in mid-January in Los Angeles. First time Colorado ever won at Poly Pavilion. Now they'll try and sweep the Bruins. That game tips off at 2 p.m. Mountain Time on Sunday at the Event Center. Our coverage in the Colorado Basketball Network gets underway at 1:30 with Buffs Warm-Up presented by Safeway. Keep in mind that is Senior Day. We'll say goodbye to four seniors, George King, Dominic Collier, Josh Repine, and Torrey Miller-Stewart. We'll look forward to the broadcast on Sunday. For now, though, we wrap up the Buffs Insider for this week. I'm Voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson. We'll talk to you next time.